Hello and welcome to Board Stupid, the podcast that loves talking tabletop board games, D&D and other awesome stuff. I'm Wayne.
I am venture capitalist Simon.
And I'm CEO Dom.
We're just nerds or CEOs talking about the things we love that are worth geeking out over. So Simon, are you ready?
I believe so.
Tom, are you ready?
Yes.
I'm ready to make $1 billion. And if you guys are ready, let's dive in to this week's episode. This week, we played Big Boss. We played as a series where we talk about an epic board game that we played this week. And this week, it's the corporation founding, stock exchanging, merger planning, Big Boss. In this episode, we're going to dive into the things we like and break down everything that makes it great. At the end of the day, we only play awesome games, and Big Boss is a surprisingly cutthroat, capitalist, corporate monster. Big Boss is a game of founding companies, expanding existing companies, and taking over smaller ones and buying shares. The game is explicitly based on the Sid Sackson classic, Acquire, and shares many, many similarities with that game, although things like mergers are not as prevalent or as crucial as they are in Big Boss. Big Boss plays 3 to 6 players, is designed by the legendary Wolfgang Kramer. Art is by Wolfgang Kramer and Franz Wochwinkel. And is published, I don't know what happened there, sorry Franz, published by Funko Games. Plays in about 90 minutes, about right.
Yeah, I think we maybe came in just under
that. We've
played
it a few times, it's a bit under now. It depends on the player count.
Yeah. I can definitely see it going longer.
Yeah, with more.
Definitely with longer. More players will definitely longer, as is true with most games. I can definitely see certain groups it'll play longer as well.
Just for thought in between, I guess.
So much.
Yeah, just the thinkiness. With an MSRP of, get this, for everything that comes in this box, £33.
Sounds like a bargain.
That is cheap.
For the amount, for the sheer amount of plastic in this box, that is very cheap.
Just, yeah.
Funko have kind of got this, like, £25 to £35 niche outside of Isanubla, which was
very
understandably
expensive.
A lot more.
Yes.
They've kind of, furrowed a niche of
good quality
cheap to
games.
Mid-range games, but quality's there.
Quality games that are good games, by the way, which is something that Matteo mentioned. He just didn't think of Funko as a company that makes good board games.
They've done a reasonably good job of picking their game designers.
We came to them first, I think, with Pan Am, didn't we?
Yes.
Which was like a real surprise hit for us.
Awesome.
And then
we love that.
Now that we've got to kind of, I want to say, become known with Funko, they've got a really good list of games. It's quite surprising. Mm. So outside of the pop vinyl thing, which is its own $1 billion industry, I think. Their game line is going from strength to strength from what we've seen.
Absolutely. Certainly is.
Well, they've got Wolfgang Kramer.
So. As well. And this time and before that, they've been working with Prospero Hall. It's another great design
house. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very, very good. Let's start with the components and art design. And I'll just take it off by saying it's a wonderful sort of Art Deco 1920s New York type vibe, right? Immediately.
Yes.
I'm going to jump straight to the industry cards.
Yes.
Because they are the main draw. I mean, there's this great sort of verticality with all the plastic and building skyscrapers and stuff like that, but the industry cards, there's one copy of each card numbered 1 through 72. Every single one has their own artwork,
which is amazing. They're
all this sort of lovely Art Deco sort of artwork, very 50s and 60s.
Mm.
It's like industry advertisement from the
30s, 40s, 50s. Yes. And they have this like wonderful colour gradient all the way through the 72 pieces of artwork.
It's really, really cool, isn't it?
And they match in with the coloured number spaces on the main board. So you've got this snaking board with 72 squares on where you place your buildings. And that again has that colour gradient running through. The cards all match that. It doesn't mean anything other than it gives you a quick look. You know, if you've got purple cards, you're probably in the 20s. You've got green cards, you're probably in the 50s and 60s. It just gives you a quick hint as to where you might be
looking.
Quality
of life. The board, design choice.
Yeah, the board itself is quite plain.
Double thickness.
Until you start putting stuff on it. It's got this sort of like snaking track. It's double thickness. It's quite nice production. But it's very simple. It's just got the numbers 1 to 72 in a big circle.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes.
What happens though is you fill the board with skyscrapers
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's really interesting to look at. The board itself is not the appeal.
Yes. It's what happens during the game and how you raise the whole board up. Yeah, really, really cool. So the board is great. Let's talk about the size skyscrapers as well. You get tons of these little plastic blocks.
Yeah, how many of those do we have of the base building bit? It feels like there's going to be...
Let's go check the manual.
I think there's more than 72.
Lots.
You have... Yeah.
It might be that there are exactly the same number because you build up and then leave spaces. So it might be that we end up with just the right amount.
That may be. So you have these little plastic blocks which...
92 building pieces.
There you go. 92 building pieces. You have these, most of them are black, and they literally look like segments of a multi-story building that you might find anywhere in a big metropolitan area.
Yeah, it's slightly see-through, clear black plastic, but yeah, effectively it's a black stack. It kind of, you end up looking like a Chrysler building or an Empire State building.
They all stack very each other reminiscent like, of the Empire State building, I think. Once you've got sort of four or five of them stacked up.
Yeah, like Duplo pieces.
Yeah, the key piece though being the toppers. Which come in one of eight, I think.
Corporation headquarters.
That's the one.
There's...
I'm counting eight.
Eight. Yes, you're right.
A range of colours. And I was just saying this to Wayne before we started recording. You've got these lovely red, orange, yellow, kind of a minty green and a purple.
Yeah.
And then you've got a white and a grey and a black, which merges into the generic building pieces.
The grey is quite hard to see.
I find it a very odd choice that they didn't go with... a darker blue or a forest green or something that would make it more distinct than grey, white and black. I feel like they weirdly ran out of colours when you've got this...
White is fine, I think. But
The white is fine, but the other, I don't know, there's something about the black one. And the topper pieces are uniquely designed as well.
Which is great.
Unique corporation headquarters that are evocative of the names of the corporations.
Yeah.
Right. So a lot of them sort of... They're like different, almost like different civilizations. There's one that looks like a Mayan... pyramid called Luna.
Yeah. One which looks like a pagoda. Pagoda. Don't have you that.
There is a pagoda. Yeah, almost like a Colosseum type one for the Oasis.
Yeah, they're really cool sculpts, actually, to be honest with you. I think they're awesome.
They're very eye-catching. I think once the game is in process, it's got a great curb appeal. You can't help but be drawn into looking at it. Even if just for a moment to go, what on earth are you playing? Because there's very few games that have that verticality, I think.
Yeah, we mentioned it a couple of times.
To this degree.
Certainly. To this degree.
Yeah, there's various games out there with some verticality, but they normally limit themselves, whereas this, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger over the course
of the game. It's really nice. It has a great texture, I guess, to it. It's really awesome. So that's those pieces. You also get a separate share price board, which is just a sort of piece of cardboard, but again, all in that typical Art Deco font and style.
Yeah, the colour palette and the typefaces, all of that era, very evocative.
Mm-hmm.
You're almost looking like at a newspaper articles or an official publication from the time that it's trying to recreate.
Yeah.
You got all your share cards to go with those eight different corporations. And again, nicely designed in the corporation colours, which you collect throughout the game. But yeah, as Tom said at the start, those numbered cards, 1 through 72, the industry cards that you get are just so eye-catching. They're really great.
Yeah, really, really
and
good.
Then all of your money, your little cardboard chits rather than being coins or paper notes, the different value cardboard.
What do you think
pieces.
Of that as a design choice, cardboard chits as opposed to coinage?
The frequency with which you're moving them back and forth, earning and spending, I think it works really well, honestly.
Yeah, I think I feel like it's more suitable than coins because you're talking like millions of dollars at a time. It's like 50 million. And I think that in a coin would be
there's
weird.
A lot of denomination.
Yeah, so I feel like this is more like a.
It's like
note.
A bank transfer yeah, a bank note transfer. Or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Feels a bit more appropriate. Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a nice little carry tray comes.
Yeah.
Yeah, duly noted, actually. Something that Funko does better than pretty much, I want to say, every other publisher in my collection.
Short of a lot of I'm saying mostly Kickstarter style games where you end up with game trays sort of.
Yeah, short
designs.
Of the game trays boutique design and stuff, especially for stuff in this price point.
I would say outside of the luxury range.
Yeah, they do great things like for quality of life, like little trays for your stuff, like trays for the tokens. Which
I
you
can't
don't
think
see
of many games where
point.
You buy a game for 30 quid, get this much
stuff,
pieces.
Yes.
And have little game, little trays for your money to hand around easily.
Yeah, it's an absolutely great little addition there, and that's they must be commended for it, I think. I think that's pretty much everything that comes in the box.
There's a couple of little radio antennas in your player colours.
Ah, yes, you got two radio antennas.
Which can be added onto the top of a a corporation headquarters to signal that they're sort of your main investment.
Yeah. Let's make it bizarrely striking because, they're in their own range of colours.
They're like in your colour, not the corporation colour. Yeah.
Yes, on top of the white or the dark blue on top of the purple. It looks really cool. Actually, when they go
it's
on there.
Interesting because you don't own the corporations, right?
So we'll
the
come only
thing,
to that.
The only thing that's in your colour is the radio masts.
That's true, absolutely. So with all of that said, how would you rate the production and art design of Big Boss, or at least this edition of Big Boss? And let's make this clear, as a matter of fact. We're reviewing the newest edition, the only edition that's been released in English ever of this game. Because the game is initially from the mid-90s and was never released in English until this year?
We picked it up this year from Funko.
This year's UKGE. Yeah. So it was this year, 2023. It was the first time this game had gotten English released. So, 30 years later? That's wild.
Man,
to think
don't
about.
Tell me the 90s were 30 years ago.
That's
you?
Crazy, dude. So, which is amazing. And so we're reviewing that edition, and they've obviously made a massive production upgrade. So that's what we're reviewing. And what a wonderful thing it is. So yeah, what do you think of the production? How would you rate it?
Keeping him while we were away in Essen, Wayne and I with Matteo had a good 20-minute conversation about how we adjudicate our scores on stuff. Bearing in mind price or otherwise, definitely keeping it price in mind. I don't know if I could give this anything other than a 5. Really,
yeah, it's a ratio.
It has to be.
It's got
for both its look and how it allows you to play the game. Yeah. I think it has to be a 5.
When we cracked this open the first time, I wasn't particularly impressed. I had a look at the board and I was like, that's kind of boring. And then once you actually play the game and you see all the verticality and how it comes together. And you appreciate all of the industry cards. I think that's a big addition. That much artwork, custom artwork,
which is fantastic. Yeah. I think it's marvelous.
Which is just fantastic for its price range. So yeah, definitely a 5.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree at all. This has got to be for £30 ish or your local equivalent. What you get in this box in terms of production,
18
beats,
goats.
Yeah, 18 many goats.
That's a good goat to Sterling.
Yeah,
depends where you are.
Yeah, right. It's a absolutely marvelous production. 5 out of 5 for me, absolutely. So let's talk about the gameplay and how you play the game. So Tom, you won the game this time by a very narrow margin, but you won. How do you win Big Boss?
Mercilessly crush your opponents with capitalist principles.
I love it.
And then hold out on any hope of them completing the one thing they need.
Crush
right?
people, strip them of their dreams,
yes.
Avoid any trickle-down as much as possible to the peons.
Like the current Tory government of the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Good.
We're leveling up. We bought level up cards. Oh, they only work for us.
This game all boils down to money. Everything is money. Everything that you do during the game, all of the money that you spend, eventually is just converted back into the money at the end of the game, and that is your points.
And it's your
points
to
determine who wins the game. And there are a number of different ways of earning money. Most of it will come through shares. And manipulation of shares in the way that you grow or found your corporations or have those corporations merge.
Mm-hmm.
But everything goes back into money. Any industry cards that you buy that you don't use turn back into money. You get extra shares from your radio towers that are extra money at the end of the game. But it's mostly about the shares.
Just about them shares, about them money. And yeah, it's certainly a economy game, a stock stocks game. It's a stock
it's
and
a
shares
stock game,
yeah. stock market game, but done in such a clever and interesting esoteric way. And at the face of it seems very simple, but I think this game is devilishly complex in the detail.
I still feel, and I'm hoping at some point it's going to click more for me, that there's something that I haven't quite worked out. That's not to say I'm doing badly at it. I came second by a small margin to between the two of you at first and third. But there's definitely a bit where I feel like I don't quite know what I should be doing when.
Yeah, so this is the thing, is everything that you invest comes back to you. And it's actually quite difficult to lose any money.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Over the course of the game. So it's all about knowing which investments to make to maximize the return and when to do them for timing.
Yes.
Right, and that's about the mergers, that's about investing in something that's currently giving you cheap stocks, it's about buying the radio tower, the radio mast, on a company that gives you cheap stocks before they go up in price.
And also,
Hedging your bets.
Yeah, and preventing opponents from growing too big, right?
Yeah.
So stopping mergers happening. It's deceptively simple, but I think there is an elegance there. And I think to your point, Simon, sometimes I feel the same way about this game, where I think there's something like more I can learn about the mystery of it.
Yeah, right. There's a good few turns where I felt like I had $5 to my name.
Yes.
You guys were buying and selling and merging and upgrading, and I'm sat there going, I just want to pick up a card.
Yes. Yeah.
I had nothing I could play that was particularly useful, if useful at all. But it kind of all comes together at the end. As Tom said, you're never really losing out, because anything that you do buy in the game, you will get generally at least what you spent back. It's more about how much further everyone else is getting by doing better with their trades.
Yes.
Yeah. It manages to replicate to a degree the stocks and shares trading of Wall Street without getting too bogged down in lots of minutiae.
You don't worry about interest rates or anything like that. It's just, when you invest in a corporation, make it bigger or found a new corporation, its value goes up. Makes sense.
Yeah.
You buy shares where you want to buy shares, and over time, the corporations get bigger, so those shares are worth more money, and then eventually sell them.
Yeah, the share rates, the share prices never go down, right? Yeah. So the minimum you get back. The worst case scenario is you get back what you put in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's not a huge amount.
So you might
of risk
buy
there.
Shares at $8 and they never move, and you're like, well,
I got $8 back. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's when other shares have got to 50 each, and people are selling them for
$200
at a time. You know.
So there's only two actions, right?
Yes.
It's fairly straightforward. You go around the table, everyone does one thing, and you go round and round and round the table until we run out of building blocks.
That's basically it.
Like, in life, when you run out of Lego bricks, you can't build anymore,
and you're sad.
And the game ends.
Game ends, yeah. So let's talk about those two actions then. On the table is going to be an open draft. I love me some open drafting.
Mm-hmm.
An open market row of cards.
Six of the industry cards.
Six of the industry cards. And again, they all map to one of the spaces on the main board in the middle. You could, on your turn if you wanted to, just buy one of those cards for $5 million.
Yep.
That's your turn. Simple as that.
Or you could buy a level up card, which is like a wild card.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
But you can only use it to build up something that already exists.
Correct. Or alternatively, instead of buying a card, you could play a card. And playing a card is slightly more complex. If there are companies that haven't been founded yet, you could found a company, which basically means to put some blocks on the board around the card that you've played.
Yeah, you play a card. The card has a number on it. You found the company in that location on the snake track.
Exactly.
It can't be too close to other corporations, but otherwise there's no restrictions.
Beautiful. Or alternatively, if you're not founding a company, you can expand a company and make it bigger by putting more blocks on the board next to a company that already exists.
Yeah, so spaces 4, 5, 6 might already be occupied. If you've got a number 7 card or a number 3 card, you put a block down next to that existing building. The share price will go up for everyone that owns a share in it, and then you get money based on the new share price.
Exactly. And the game rewards verticality. The higher you can make a building,
it gets exponentially more valuable in terms of share price increases.
Exactly, as you lord your giant corporate cock over everyone
else.
It's
great because it encourages you to try and build these giant skyscrapers surrounded by loads of little single-story buildings.
Yeah. Which is really awesome. So relatively straightforward in that respect, right?
Mm.
So again, devilishly simple.
Yeah, it doesn't sound complicated until you realise that you don't have the numbers you want, or the numbers haven't come out on the table, or someone else has bought the number that you want. And
this is what happened to me, and I think would probably have been the difference between me winning and losing, was
absolutely.
I needed to merge purple and orange together, right? Or merge purple and black together.
Mm-hmm.
And you had the missing pieces in between those two, Tom, because I know that
both sides.
Because I bought a card in the market row. The next card that came out was the card I needed.
and
Tom was like,
straight up,
and
I was like, I'm just going to sit on that for the rest of the game.
I'll never bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you just need those cards. But the game does give you other options, because whenever you invest, you will get money back. So investing smartly and then reinvesting shares in sort of maybe up-and-coming companies is the way forward, I think.
Yeah, you can end up with a multitude of options. You can maybe expand one set of buildings, but then you have the opportunity to buy shares in, as you say, a potentially currently lower valued one.
Mm.
So maybe you expand yellow and get $20, but you want to invest in grey, which is only $5 a piece. So you spend half of your new earnings getting two shares in something, which you then hope to expand on future turns and hope that that actually happens, or you invest in pink and it never goes anywhere. Yeah, well, that's it. For a good while.
Yeah, well, that's it, right? You play a card, you expand somewhere, or you start a new corporation, then you get an opportunity to buy shares, and you could buy shares in the company you've just expanded, or you can buy shares elsewhere. And it's all about hedging your bets.
Yeah.
It's kind of
an educated
gamble based on everything you know about the current table presence, which cards are in the market row, which ones you're holding yourself.
Yes.
Because you might have, or either starting, because you start with a hand of 10, you might have in your hand or buy from the market on subsequent turns a set of cards, like a whole run of 10, and you go, well, I can build in the middle and then expand either side back and forth and like make my own empire regardless of what anyone else wants to do.
Mm. Like that's the same thing I did up here on the board, where I founded two companies essentially close to each other.
Knowing that you could fill the gaps.
I could fill the gaps in to then eventually merge them, which I did.
And that's the sort of the big crux of the game, right? That's where all the money explodes, is when two companies collide
and create a merger.
It's a really interesting and annoying mechanism for me, who only managed it once versus you guys.
So it's all about timing with the mergers. Mergers resolve in a specific way.
Yes.
But essentially it boils down to the smaller company gets eaten, as with life.
Yeah, it gets eaten by the big company.
The smaller company pays out all of the shares that are owned in that company by all players at their existing share rate.
They then go out of the game.
Then they're removed entirely from the game, and their share value is added to the bigger fish's value, right? Leaving you with one big corporation that now owns all of that combined territory.
Yeah, which is awesome.
You end up with increasingly few, but increasingly large megaliths of companies creeping their way around the board.
They slowly sort of snake their way around the board, eating all the smaller competition.
And depending on how and where stuff was started, you might end up with the two giants either side of the opposite corners almost, or you might end up with them all in the bottom end of the board, which is what we've had a couple of times, and all the little floaters that no one really cares about or doesn't have cards for to expand. Bear in mind there's 72 and you don't often see more than half the pack until you're right towards the end.
Those
small companies might just float around at the end, and the bottom big ones are just getting bigger and bigger, creeping closer and closer, making everyone more and more money until someone has to tip.
It's quite conceivable that some of the small companies never get eaten.
I genuinely thought it might not happen.
You've got 72 spaces and what did I say, 84 pieces, 94 pieces,
something like that.
So once you consider the verticality, it's very possible that you just have gaps we have,
I think that's very, very, very common, as a matter of fact.
So you can stop mergers from happening by strategically holding out on certain cards. Or you might hedge your bets on a company that never gets merged, and actually its share value never really takes off, and then you don't get a lot of gain out of it.
You can, on your turn, choose to sell shares instead of taking one of the other regular turns, right?
So if you can't do anything.
Yeah, the game obliges you to do something if you can. If you can buy a card, or if you can play a card, you must.
Yeah, so you can't just sit on cards out of spite. But if you have the funds to hold out by just buying level up cards or buying other cards from the market, you can hold out that way.
Yeah. But there is an opportunity to say, I had pink, it sat in a corner and no one was within 10 spaces. I go, okay, I'm stuck with cards that I can't place anymore because they break the placement rules, of which there are very few, but they are key. You think, okay, I'm going to sell everything I've got in pink and then I'll make that money back and I'll start again. You're probably not having a very good game at that point, but it's a possibility. You won't be entirely shut out of the game at any point.
What I find very interesting about this, and again, one of the more esoteric things about this game, is that you don't really own, you don't have a piece on the game. Right? That's really hard to get your head around.
It's not
first.
My company.
You don't own the corporations. You might found that corporation.
You might have
and
some
then
shares in it.
Never buy any shares in it for the rest of the game.
It's really unusual to get your head around that. Actually, nothing on the board particularly belongs... Well, it doesn't belong to you, really. So
except the radio masts.
Except the radio masts. It's the only piece that belongs to you.
And all that signifies is...
More shares,
more
right?
investments
more shares
in
that particular corporation. Yeah.
Which I think is fascinating to get your head around. It's like it has this weird ebb and flow, which I think is brilliant.
I found it very interesting, and I noticed it a couple of times, that Wayne, you were the sole investor. You're the only person holding shares in at least two different companies.
Well, that's purple and orange for a long time.
We had purple and orange near to each other, right? And Wayne was the only person who had shares in either, and you could just see he was slowly forcing them together.
Which
because
mean
he would get a payout.
He gets paid twice.
Yeah. Yeah. Like twice. Yeah, exactly.
So then there's some turns I'm like, well, I'll expand red, and then I'm going to buy shares in whatever Wayne's got, just so he doesn't... He's not the sole beneficiary. Like,
yeah, right. Because when not they merge, you would get something.
Might not be my best move for my own payout, but it means that he'll get... And it's not even that I'm diminishing what you'll get. It just means I'll get some as well.
Well, here's the thing, right?
Psychologically, it feels better.
Yeah, but also by doing that, by buying some sort of shares, you're either going to get a payout or you're going to end up with shares worth twice as much as what you paid for them. So there's a win-win for you in any way, right? Assuming those two things
gains
merge.
Value.
Yeah, quite. Fascinating game. Let's go into the complexity then. So in terms of the mechanisms, BGG calls it 2.39. Sorry, 2.4.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think there's plenty of strategy to it, and you could easily play this without thinking about the strategy.
Okay. What do you think? How do you feel about the complexity there?
In terms of learning how it works, as we've said, it's very simple. You can either play a card, buy a card, and then your share of price will just follow a very simple and strict ruling.
Yeah.
But it's the when and the where. Do I invest in this one? Do I buy this one? Do I hold out? Do I try and merge early? Yeah, do I hold out till everything's bigger?
Do you hold out, invest your money in buying new industry cards, knowing that later on you'll have cards to spare that will potentially stop other people from doing mergers? It's very strategic.
Bearing that in mind, I'd say 2.5 to 3 for me, depending on maybe on the game group, because you can definitely just play it as, I'll play the card, see what happens. Rinse and repeat till you get rich or
look at the
market.
I don't have those numbers. I'm not going to buy those. I'm just going to play a card because I can play this card. Yeah. Don't think about it.
I think this is one of those beautiful games where, like, it's to learn the game and understand the mechanical process of it. It's like a 2, but the strategic depth is way, like, it's like a 3, 3.5 even.
Yeah.
Like, it's like there is way more to the game than the mechanisms at first give you. You go, oh, what do? I buy a card or I play a card? That seems straightforward. But it's devilish.
So. Yeah. There's complexity in the way it plays out rather than in the mechanism itself, I'd say.
Classical Euro design. Let's talk about the theme gameplay interaction, though. Does it feel thematic? And do those mechanisms that we talked about work together with its theme? And its theme being sort of creating big companies and stockholding and economy.
Yeah, it's obviously a simplified emulation, right?
Yeah.
But the idea that it's all about sort of timing mergers and manipulating the stock prices to try and make money out of investments is very true to life.
Yes.
It's just that the investments don't go down in value in this game, whereas they obviously can in real life. So, you know, it's a very optimistic look at capitalism, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, everything always goes well. What do you think, Simon?
Yeah, I think undoubtedly it fits the theme and gameplay together really well. It feels like an educated gamble rather than an out-and-out risk versus reward. As Tom said, you're never going to necessarily lose money. You just can be way behind on optimizing your share pricing. So
you won't necessarily maximize your return of investment.
Yeah.
Whatever, so.
Yeah,
I think it does a fantastic job of it. I mean, you certainly are thinking with your money head on, right? How much am I going to get out of this move? Whatever it is, am I going to get something extra out of it? And I think it does that
If I bump this up, I'll make X money. I can reinvest X money in shares for this. Next round, I can bump those shares up by a factor of whatever.
Yeah, I like that. The timing to how the mergers work. When we played today, for example, we worked out that it would be better for you to try and bump up the share price of the smaller company before a merger, because the bigger company was already nearly at the maximum share price on the track. So you would get more money by bumping the small value
for a bigger payout
payout on the shares that you owned, rather than trying to make the bigger company bigger before you merged them, because it would have capped anyway.
And that would vary depending on the number of shares everyone else held as well.
Of course,
because I'm benefiting everyone else that holds shares.
And we played a relatively simple game today with 3 players, but you can play with 6.
Six would be in.
We've done 5, I think we're great at 5.
I can picture 6 being a nightmare, but also incredibly fun.
Yeah, I think it would be hilarious.
Depending, again, on
because the amount of cards that would already be in play.
With 5 or 6 players, it would be much, much harder to lock out areas and hold out on people.
This is one of those rare games that plays 5 very well, I think. mean, I don't know what BGG says about that, but I think when in the time that I played it at five, I think I've played
five at four. We so did five at Expo, I think, on our first Expo, playthrough.
And I think I've done five at another time. I think it's well rated at five as well. Mm. And four is very, very good. But I think three worked well as well, actually. I think it's good at all.
I think three worked really well, actually, yeah.
Yeah. Good at all those player accounts for sure.
It maybe becomes more obvious exactly what your two opponents want to do versus what your four or five opponents want to do and what cards they may have. Because we saw Tom buying
immediately what you're doing.
Those green cards, and like, well, we know he has them.
Yeah.
He thought you had number one when I did, but
I knew it had been bought. That was close enough.
That's the thing. Yeah, that's right. You knew it was in play is the key thing.
I saw it go from the market.
Absolutely. Right, let's talk about the flow of the game. I think this game flow is super snappy. I think it's wonderful. I mean, the only thing that really slows it down is thought, because it can be deceptively thinky.
I think in the lead up to a merger in particular, where someone's trying to work out what is the best way around to manipulate something, particularly if the two share values are very close together, and you're like, oh, hang on, I need to do this first to guarantee that the one I want to take over takes over.
Yeah.
Right. So you might have a few turns where you have to sort of manipulate and think about it a bit more, but for the most part, it's fairly straightforward.
I've said this a bunch of times, but I really like games where you do a thing, right? And then it's the next person's
turn. One decision point, a thing. It's barely even a flowchart. The only time there's a flowchart is when a merge happens.
Yes, and then there's a cascading effect accordingly, right? You're either going to play the card or you're going to buy the card, and I think that's wonderful. It makes things super snappy. It means people aren't waiting too long. There's not a massive amount of downtime. I think it's to its credit.
Is it worth mentioning that there is an alternative rule that is more reminiscent of the more reminiscent of the 1994 version, where the level up cards work differently?
Let's mention it.
Yeah,
you've mentioned it.
So,
is this the mention?
Well,
yeah, why not? The other cards that you can buy during your buy action, instead of buying from the open market, are level up cards. I mentioned before, level up cards are sort of wild. They can only be used to increase the height of one of your existing stacks of buildings. So they can't expand sideways, they can only go up. Which is great because it adds to the share price. In the original 1994 version, they are specifically numbered, right? They have specific number levels.
Yes.
And they can only be used if you've got the right number for the right level.
Yeah, if you want a level 3 building, you need a level 3 card.
So it's trickier to use those level up cards in the old version. This version is quite free and open in how it works with the level up cards.
They worked with Wolfgang Kramer to completely update the rule set for today's, I suppose, considerations of what a Eurogame might look like or what this game might look like today.
I like it because I do feel like that probably would have made the level up cards much less tempting to use and buy.
Yes.
So it's more accessible, but I like that they've given you that kind of retro switch if you want to go back.
Yeah,
there is an option in the rule book to go and play the original 1994 version, right? And it just tells you all the things that you need to do to do that. I haven't tried that yet. I've only played this edition. I think it could be fun maybe to try that at some point.
I mean, just quickly then, the original 1994 version, you have fewer shares per company.
Yes.
The industry and the level cards are shuffled together, and the level cards come out in the open market.
I've noticed that they've got the same back. Yeah,
that's interesting.
You start with more cards, but less money.
Mm-hmm. Start with more cards.
12 cards instead of 10. Interesting. There isn't an open market. You buy cards face down.
Yeah, so you just buy blind from the deck.
I'm not sure I like that. Because the chances are you get a level up card that you can't use.
Yes.
Or you might get a level up card that you might use. You can't even buy the cards to expand in the right direction that you might want.
Based on feeling, that feels quite old school, right?
That's very
old
school.
It does feel old school.
Yeah.
Like, you buy a random thing and hope for the best.
Oh, I definitely prefer this version.
Yep.
Even just on the surface, having not played it.
Having not played it, at least. Alrighty, let's move into the final thoughts then. So, what do you like most about Big Boss?
Big money.
Mo problems.
I think what Tom means is when you have a big turn, you get a real big turn. It feels incredible.
When you pull off the merger, like if you plan the merger and get it to trigger, and you have shares in the lower value company, you get a payout from the lower value company, and you get a payout for the new share price for the combined share price of the new bigger company.
You get a big stack.
Load of money.
Yes, you do. Yeah. That is very satisfying. What did you like the most about the game there, Simon?
I mean, I can't take my eyes off these artwork. Yeah. It's the kind of thing you could blow up any one of these cards and have as a poster on your wall.
I think you're quite right.
They're really awesome. Nice. The economy function is really interesting. I'd say it's not necessarily my kind of game out of the box, but I've really enjoyed it every time we've played it.
Yeah.
I still feel like there's something I'm missing. I don't know what that is. I don't think I'm playing it wrongly. I just always feel like there's something I need to get to click in my head. But yeah, I think it looks great. The table presence and the artwork specifically, I think is fantastic. And I think it's got a really strong economic engine in it. I just don't quite get it myself.
I'm going to tag on that because I think that's the thing I like the most about it. The weird esoteric nature of this game. I said it a few times. It's kind of almost nebulous. I feel like I'm grasping
every it. You approach one of these sort of big merger decision points, you're like, which way round is the better way round to do this?
Yeah, what's the best?
I'm glad it's not just me then that has these issues.
First and, then
and it's like, do I buy the cards that have just come out or should I instead be investing over here? Is there a best way of doing it? And I think what I like is
the temptation to just get shares in the thing you've built up.
Yeah.
Feels like the obvious option, but it's not.
Not always, yeah. And I think that sort of mysterious nature of what's the best way to play this game is like really addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, each time I've played this, I've been like, ooh, I really liked that. I really want to try and learn more about how to get good at it because it feels really interesting. So I like that the most about it.
You're at the mercy of the cards that come out.
As well,
but
there is
definitely, you can sort of make the tactical decisions about the cards that come out and you can say, I think this space is going to be a dead space for the corner of the board. I'm not going to worry about those numbers.
Yes.
I'm going to focus instead on trying to pick up numbers as they come out that might allow me to either increase the size of one of my companies that I'm backing, not your actual company, or to block someone else from being able to do something similar.
And something I did for the first time in this game, which I haven't done in any of the previous games, is buy something blind because the cards that work, and it worked out really well.
We bought quite a few cards blind this
and
time.
And sometimes it works out bloody great.
Most of the market row for a significant portion of the game was a big open dead space that we couldn't expand into because all the corporations were already started.
But if we look at the final state of the board, the sort of three quarters of it is filled. So when you're looking at the way the last third of the game in terms of its completion time, dipping in blind isn't necessarily a bad thing. You might get something that's going to fill a gap.
Yeah.
And it's, it happened to me, I think, twice, which is great.
Yeah, there's eight spaces, 21 through 28, that are not occupied in our end game. And five of those spaces, the cards are face up on in the market. So you could almost guarantee you wouldn't get one of the numbers you didn't want.
You'll get something good.
There's
maybe
so few left.
Yeah, there's a lot of things I like about that. Is there anything that you didn't like particularly?
See above, really. Is
see above, I guess.
You can theoretically be screwed over by the cards that you draw, and you could get unlucky every time and keep drawing cards that aren't useful to you. But there's ways to pivot into it, and I think with the knowledge of having played a few times, and detaching yourself from the idea that you own a specific company, just change how you look at your cards. And you can probably work out something. I mean, Simon, you were sort of convinced that you were behind for a long time. You beat Wayne. You're actually not that far behind me.
Mm.
Yeah, there's a few rounds where I didn't have a card I could play. That is, all of the companies were founded, so I had to play a card that was attached to one of the existing buildings, and I didn't have one of those cards, nor did I have any money to buy any with because I'd somehow ended up with less than 5 million. So I felt like I was kind of stuck, so I did have to sell a share in something to get some money back and then be really cautious on the next turn as to what I spent that money on.
But it
and
worked.
I bounced back.
It worked out well, it's fine.
It can just feel like when your next player around is like bumping up a building and getting a payout of 30 odd million and you're sat there with three, not being able to play a turn, you're like, oh, that kind of
particularly later on.
It
does, you get knocked out later on.
Or like, the thing that I don't like is sometimes you are at the mercy of the cards. Like, for example, several times, bought a card, the next card that came out was literally critical for my game, which then gets picked up by the next person. And there is nothing you can do about that.
Yep.
It is what it is. Maybe next time I get that card next time. Yeah. So,
and the holding out on a space you know someone else wants to creep next to, so I had one, Tom had 72, and that would have been the joining up, and Tom refused to play 72, knowing that it would allow that option.
But
it's like not playing an extra triple word score in Scrabble. You just don't do it. Yeah. So it is part of the game, and therefore, and I think ties into the theme. You're not looking to be nice to your competitors.
You could have looked at the market, assessed that there was a risk that the card that you needed came out, and bought blind instead of buying one from the open market.
But it's the thing, if you need more than one thing... Yeah, that's it. You're right.
It was a risk that you have to take, up a space on the market.
Exactly that. Who is this game for? What sorts of other games that people play would they also
venture
like
capitalists?
Venture capitalists for those people.
Yeah, no, I don't think I've played vast numbers of economy games. I think
if you liked smartphoning,
I was going to say smartphone maybe.
This is the same sort of, and maybe slightly simpler.
Feeling.
It's slightly simpler than smartphone, but it's the same sort of pitch. Do you want to play quite a economy-centric game.
Like a business, business building type game. Yeah.
I'm not sure you guys have played it yet, but I had a chance to play Mosaic recently.
Okay.
Yeah, I've played Mosaic.
That had not really vast similarities, but you were placing down buildings next to your other existing buildings, which then gave you a degree of financial or other reward.
Neighbouring benefits.
So there's kind of a loose tying in there. I think maybe people have enjoyed Civ-type stuff to a point because it's got that city building and economy crossover.
Mm-hmm.
I've not played anything else that's immediately like this that's jumping out, to be honest.
I think if you like open drafting particularly, games like Century, Spice Road, anything with an open draft, open market, I think this has... Because it's such a core part of the game, especially in this version of the game. If you like that sort of mechanism, you might like this. Right, so give us your last words and your... final thoughts on Big Boss.
I'm going to give this a 4. Mm-hmm. There's lots of stuff I really like about it. There's definitely the possibility that you can get walled out.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, we can talk about calculated risks. But a lot of the time, you have to make some of those decisions blind. So it's difficult to know if you've necessarily made the right decision. But there's lots of stuff in here that is potential strategic depth. Like you said, there's lots of things that you could potentially get better at making informed decisions, knowing, for example, that there's only one copy of every card and having an idea of what the chances are of that card coming out, those sorts of things you could bear in mind. But it's still reasonably light, and I've really enjoyed it every time we've played, even with the various different player counts. I'd be curious to try it with 6, and I don't necessarily want to try it with 2, but I'd be curious to see how it played with 2. But 3, 4, 5 is really good.
I think it actually only plays 3 to 6. Is that a minimum of 3?
Is it 3?
Yeah, okay. I think it's 3 to 6. So you could try it, but I think it'd work. Simon, you're good.
Yeah, I think you'd need that extra person, wouldn't you?
Ah, you're right.
Wait a second. No, it says here 2 to 6, but
it says community 3 to 6.
Oh, that's BGG, because BGG says do not play it at 2 players.
Do not play it at 2. That's the recommendation. That's it does say 2 to 6 on the box.
So you could play it at 2, maybe.
Yeah. But I don't think it would be great at 2.
Right. You're right.
I'm going to give this a 3 overall.
Okay.
For my own personal liking. I would generally play it if I was offered, but I wouldn't necessarily go out of my way to play it, if you follow. I'm very, very much happy to play it today. I enjoyed it. I wouldn't necessarily have it at the top of my list of things I want to like pull out a copy and go, all right, guys, you want to play this today?
Who wants to build a slightly phallic giant skyscraper shape?
Why would you need to go there, Tom? Yet another instance of, if yours looks like that, you need to seek medical assistance.
that's fair.
That's not to take anything away from the game itself. It's just where I sit on it. I think it's a great game for what it is, but for my liking, it's a 3 out of 5 overall.
I think that's entirely fair. I think I might break the mold and I might give it a 5 out of 5. It's such a legend. It's a legendary game. And like I said, the thing I like the most about it is the mystery of it. I think I feel like every time I play it, I feel like I just need to play it again. I feel like, I reckon I could do better next time. I reckon I'd enjoy it more next time. And I keep enjoying it. And I think if I'm going to have anything as like, what is a 5 out of 5 game for me? It's a game that I keep wanting to have to play.
Yeah. There's definitely an element of, I can get better at this.
Yes.
I'm not there yet, which is, I'm kind of halfway between, I'm not getting any better, I'll stop, and I really need to play more to get
really
better.
I really want to get,
yeah, I get where you're coming
from. And
I'm
enjoying the process of learning and getting better at the game. If there's a game where I might really enjoy it, but god dang, I don't think I really want to play that very often because it's like exhausting to play.
Yeah,
you know,
hard to get to the table,
to play.
Tough to teach. Yeah,
yeah, like I can't give those types of games a 5 out of 5, but something like this, I think I have to. The production is so good. The design speaks to me. I don't know what it is about it.
Fantastic price point.
Yeah. I really like the game. I like economy games anyway. I love open drafting games. I think this is an absolutely magic experience. And for me, it's a 5. So the legendary Wolfgang Kramer with the legendary Big Boss is available now. And you can pick it up for super cheaps. And I think I would certainly recommend that you do so. Thanks for listening to Board Stupid. Subscribe to us to get future episodes of the show delivered directly to your ear holes via your favourite podcast service. You can find us pretty much anywhere on the internet except OnlyFans, but it's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
Especially
Google us.
Just Google us. Especially on Instagram. Please follow us on there, run by lovely Simon, who does a fantastic job on the Instagram page. You can also find us now more and more on YouTube, and there we have a quickly growing channel, so please
go
check
that out. You can see our faces. Be warned
or be feared. Go find us there as well. If you like our content, please do interact with us, leave us a comment, and all of that good stuff. If you want any feedback on this episode, we'd love to hear from you. Have you played Big Boss? Have you played Acquire, the even older version from the 60s? Oh,
man,
that
if,
this
you've
game
got,
was played...
if you've played the original version, do let us know. We'd love to see it. I'll hear about it.
Absolutely. Let us know what it's like compared to this one. And what do you think of the reimagined version of Big Boss? Again, for the first time available in English. I think you should go check it out for yourself. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you again real soon.
Buy cheap and go home. That's what I heard. No,
wait, no, it's not right.
Sell big and buy cheap. No, wait, almost.
Go big or go home.
Go big or go home.
Let's go home, Tom.
Yeah,
let's go home.
Let's go home.